For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back solo today due to life's fixtures, congestion and team availability. Don't worry though, you won't have to listen to me for the whole show. An eclectic mix of guests this week celebrating the magical mix of non-league football. So how's your club doing in this opening month? With managerial casualties already, many a moan on a supporters forum, and some hot shot strikers already seemingly on fire, it is like the season has kicked straight back into gear and never went away. So with all that in mind, let's get things underway. So I mentioned in the opener that it was like football had never had a break over the summer. And for our first guest, it probably hasn't, with the words "Oi ref" probably still ringing in his ears. I've been to two competitive games this season, and at both there have been debates with the crowd and the players. And no one apparently seemed to fully be up to speed with the new rules being applied by the referees. So there was only one answer to get the rundown from a man in the know. Well, welcome to the Non-League Football Show, former Premier League referee and Ossett United fan, Bobby Madley.
Hey, you're right.
I'm good. And for those that don't know, you haven't had much of a summer, but because you're not just officiating in a big pre-season friendly for your beloved club, but you're also now out in Norway where summer football is well underway.
Correct. Yeah, I'm in the middle of the season over here. So the season runs from April to November. Obviously, refereeing in Norway in mid-January when it's minus 20 is probably not the best idea. So yeah, so they figure it's a summer sport, but you're right. I have been back to England, and I refereed a pre-season over there last week. So that was nice to keep in touch with English football and with my local town as well. Yeah,
I wanted to get you on because you are a big non-league fan, and come up through the ranks as well as a referee. And I believe you're almost having to start that again in Norway as well. And is it good to be learning Norwegian football at maybe a slightly lower level?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I always said I never had the arrogance to come here and say, well, I refed in the Premier League and therefore I should just go straight into the Eliteserien, which is their Premier League. So I had great conversation when I came over with the NFF and with Terje Hauger, who's the head of the referees over here. And they hid nothing from me. And I think it's actually been really good for me to actually go and experience Norwegian football. There would have been a lot of pressure to go straight into their Premier League. I think because you come from the Premier League, people suddenly expect that you're going to get every decision right and you're almost going to float around the pitch. And that doesn't happen. I'm going to make mistakes just as Norwegian referees do. So I actually think for me personally, it's helped me to get an understanding of Norwegian football and expectations here. And I think it's also probably gained a little bit of respect from the Norwegian referees because I've not come in here as pretending to be some kind of, Z-list referee celebrity. I've come in and I've been prepared to work my way back up the levels again. So, and I've really enjoyed that. It's been good fun.
It's good fun, but it's also, it's a good learning experience. And that's the reason I wanted to get you on, because I was having a chat with the officials of the first game I saw at the weekend. And we'll get onto some of the rule changes. I mean, there was a drop ball and everybody in the crowd just sort of looked. Yeah, what's the referee done there? And we're constantly saying on this show that, yeah, players at a high level, but every level should probably go on a referee's course and actually know the rules before they start shouting at everybody that does know the rules about how they're applying it wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that it's always surprised me, the fact that the amount of players who don't actually know the laws, and I'm talking, I'm probably talking semi-professional down to grassroots football, you'd actually be surprised how well the players in professional football do actually know the laws. Clearly, they always want them to swing in their favour. I don't think it would do any harm. And I know a lot of work goes on with some of the Premier League referees now. They actually go into the youth academies of Premier League and Football League teams. And it's part of their sort of school structure now within that they actually have to take some kind of referees course, not to make them into referees. But, the fact is most of those guys are not going to make it in the Premier League as players. So there's also that option to say to them, look, if you don't make it as a player, you have these football skills, you have the knowledge, perhaps refereeing is a way for you to go as well. You're young enough to do that. So yeah, I do think it's important that everybody should upskill. We don't expect people to go on the road and drive a car and not expect to know the highway code. So yeah, of course, footballers should know the laws of the game they're playing.
They should know and learn, but have they? I don't think they have over the summer. So the 1st of June, these new rules came in from IFAB, the International Football Association Board. I think they were announced back in March, and I think we sort of touched upon them there. But I just thought I'd I get you to clarify, you know, from a referee situation, how they're going to make the game better. Because I've already seen them implemented in these couple of games that I've seen, and it has made the game flow better. So I guess the first one that, which was, you know, it came up in the game that I was at, was the drop ball situation.
Yeah. So whereas before, basically there was never really anything written in the laws of the game that actually told the referee the procedure of a drop ball. Basically, it just said, you drop the ball, it hits the floor, it's in play. There was never any procedure of two players or kick it back to the goalkeeper. So I think they've just tried to clarify that a little. Now, for me, refereeing in Norway, we actually don't start implementing the new laws until next April. So this season, I'm still refereeing on last season's laws, if that makes sense. So when I went and did the friendly at Ossett, clearly I had to then implement the new laws, which is quite strange. It's quite strange for me as well. So the drop ball now is basically, if it's outside the penalty area, you drop the ball at the place where it was when the game stopped, and you drop it to the team who were in possession of the ball. So whereas last season you would have seen us drop it to the other team and they kick it back or kick it out of play for the other team to regain possession, you now actually drop it to the team to continue that possession. So when they drop it, that team can then carry on playing. And if it becomes an attack, it becomes an attack. The only difference in that is if it's in the penalty area, it doesn't matter who's got the ball at that point. It would just be dropped to the goalkeeper. Obviously, you can't drop it for someone just to drill into the top corner. That's not really within the spirit of the game. So it would just be dropped to the keeper. But yeah, you are going to see now that around the field of play, the ball will be dropped to the team who had it, and they'll just carry on. And both teams have to accept that. I had to explain that to both teams in my friendly, and both were unaware of that. So, yeah, first few weeks it's going to cause a few issues, I'm sure.
Yeah, but it does seem to keep the game flowing, and hopefully it will stop people going down, particularly in the later part of the game, with, you know, maybe feigning injuries, which is always a difficult thing, you know, because as you said, you've already got a million and one things that you're trying to concentrate on, and the last thing you need is someone else sort of trying to complicate things. But hopefully it will keep the game flowing, and we'll see a proper game of football.
Well, I hope so. I mean, like you said, players going down. I'm not a doctor. I'm not medically trained. So I have to take that player's safety as my primary concern. So yeah, I do have to stop the game. And I understand that sometimes that will be attacked by players. But yeah, absolutely. I think if we can drop the ball and just carry on, it's not really fair to a team who are in possession 10 yards from the penalty area. Suddenly the ball gets kicked back to their goalkeeper. The defensive team resets. So now I think we just continue the game from where we were, which has to be a good thing.
And then there's the other. Yeah, we're often criticised. Yeah, referees included, but the authorities criticised for complicating the game. And you know, this was the other thing. There's been so much debate over VAR, but I mean that doesn't affect us at grassroots level. So these are the rules that do affect it. But for me, they all seem to make common sense. Because the other one, I believe, is Law 13: free kicks where there's a wall of three or more defenders. So you can't have an attacker barging his way in and wasting time, really, and again causing grief for the referee.
Yeah, correct. And that's a situation, really, that you don't want as a referee. I mean, you've got enough to think about in that situation. And is it a handball if it's drilled at the wall? Was it deliberate? Or suddenly you've got one or two attackers that are in there, clearly only there to cause a problem. There is no other reason for them to be there, to cause a problem or to cause a space. So the new law just means that they have to be a metre away from that wall. And it's just easier for everybody. The free kick can be taken. There are no issues. There's no potential of violent conduct in there. So, yeah, it's a sensible law. And I think it's a good change for the game.
And talking of another sense, one that, it seemed to leave people shocked and, you know, shouting at the referee that he got it wrong, is a free kick in your own penalty area, which, you know, and goal kicks as well. It doesn't have to leave the area now. So, again, it creates a free-flowing game.
Yeah, exactly. So the players still have to be outside the area at the taking. The opposing players still have to be outside. The defender can be inside. But yeah, what we've seen is we just get the ball down and play football now. And there's no defender stepping inside the penalty area knowing that it's wasting time, but it has to be a retake. It's no offence committed. But, you know, we should remember when we're watching this is the same as a free kick that, yes, players have to be 10 yards or 9.15 metres away. But if that team decides to take that kick quickly and they lose possession because it hits a player who's 4 yards away, who wasn't aware of it being taken, you would play on. That's your own fault. And the same happens inside the area. So if there are attackers still inside the penalty area and the keeper decides to take a quick one, that's their own fault if that goes badly wrong. You know, if they're stood in front of the goalkeeper stopping them taking, that's different. But if they're retreating and it hits an attacker in there, well, that's the goalkeeper's fault. They take that risk. But yeah, it's again, it's another good law change, and it's one that will speed the game up a lot.
It's speeding the game up. And again, I think there was a change in regards to yellow cards. And again, if a player wants to take a free kick quickly, they can, and then you can go back and deal with the earlier offence if need be. And it is common sense. One of the other things that was noted, I think, at the outset is the wider choice for kickoff. You can now choose what end or whether you have kickoff, which again, seems a perfectly sensible idea. And it's just educating the masses now.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, most of the time the players, even for the last 17 years I've been refereeing, toss the coin and say, yeah, we'll kick off. So I don't think they've ever known any different, most players. But it does just seem a rule that, or a law that, it baffled me a little bit as to why wouldn't you be able to choose that. So again, it just brings it into a bit of common sense, something that I know we're accused of not having a lot of the time as referees. So maybe this is a start of a change. But yeah, it's just a good law change, and it's just something very simple. It doesn't cause you problems from tossing the coin as a referee, which I'm sure you'll find problems in the 90 minutes. You certainly don't need a problem when you're tossing the coin.
And then talking of the 90 minutes, another rule, again, common sense. Why has it not been in before? Substitutes can now leave the nearest point.
Yeah, so I think this is a really good one, actually, because what we did find is that when a player knew they were coming off and it was 1-0 in the 88th minute, you find that player just amazingly would end up finding themselves on the far touchline. Even as a right back, they'd find themselves in the left wing position, which then obviously would then take a little bit longer for them to come off. So yeah, so they have to leave the pitch at the nearest point, and we can get on with the game. So again, it's just a very simple, very easy, very common sense law that's been brought in, and we can keep the game flowing.
Yeah, and there were various changes on the handball rule as well, trying to create clarification, which I think is always going to be probably your biggest. Yeah, bone of contention. It's you've got to almost put your mind in the player's mind as to what his intention was and that sort of thing. But one of the interesting ones, which is an incident that happened, I think, last year or the year before at a game that I was at. Now, if a goalkeeper, if it's a back pass and a goalkeeper makes a clear intention to clear it, but maybe it in the wind that we've got in the UK at the moment, it spirals up in the air and then it comes down, and the only way to stop a goal is for him to catch it. That's not the free kick that it would have been before.
No, it's not. And I think, it's sensible. If a goalkeeper makes an attempt to clear the ball and it ends up, for whatever reason, back in their own hands, if the referee deems that it was a genuine attempt to clear and they've not just picked the ball up as a deliberate act from a back pass, then we play on. We don't see many back passes that are given anyway. I think that's the one thing that players have become a little bit more up to date with, and they understand that one completely. So yeah, again, it just takes away that problem for a referee that when someone makes a genuine clearance, you know, they didn't create the wind at the ground. So what are they supposed to do? Allow the ball to go into goal. So yeah, again, it's just a nice bit of common sense that's been added.
So actually, all these rule changes, obviously not for you because you're still refereeing under the old rules in Norway.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be easy to be a referee soon, isn't it?
I mean, it should be easier. I mean, the more common sense we can add to the game. I mean, the laws of the game will always be understood by referees, and that's the hard thing. What we need is laws of the game that are understood by everybody, ones that actually make sense to everyone. It's pointless the referee being a bit of a geek and knowing the in-depth part of law that doesn't allow this to happen. Well, when you've got 60,000, 70,000 people at a stadium or 500 people at Austin United stood there scratching their heads saying, what just happened? It's no good to a referee with them being the only person in the ground that actually knows that law. So the more common sense and the more education we can add to the game, the easier it's going to be for refs, but for players and fans as well, to make the game more enjoyable as a whole.
Yeah. And you mentioned that your beloved Ossett United there, and obviously we covered the merger, what was that, last year or just... How are things going? Because you haven't even kicked off the season.
No, it's quite strange. Yeah, the league, for whatever reason, seems to kick off 2-3 weeks after everybody else.
So I'm not quite sure. We discussed that last week. I'm not quite sure what the thought process is there. But yeah, so the club merged. They were two clubs in Ossett, Ossett Town and Ossett Albion, both in the same division, which was sort of the Evo Stick North Division 1. Ossett's a fairly big town. It's about 20,000 people in the town. But it's right in the middle of, like, with the Wakefield conurbation. So it's right in between Huddersfield, Leeds and Bradford. So many fans from Ossett, mostly Leeds and Huddersfield. So Ossett Town and Albion seemed to take a bit of a sidestep to that. They each got around 110, 120 fans, different set of fans as well, so it wasn't the same people that were watching. Financially, they were sort of two of the lowest teams in the league. They weren't the richest by any stretch. And they just took the brave step that let's join together, let's put all our efforts into one. There was always a rivalry between the two teams. It was never a bitter rivalry in that sense. So for Albion fans suddenly coming to Ossett Town's ground to watch this new team, initially you could see the pockets that were stood together. The Albion fans would all be stood in Ossett United shirts, but they kind of knew each other and the town fans knew each other. But as the season went on, and obviously the team performed really well on the pitch, it just grew, and the supporters club is big now. They're taking one, two coaches to every away game. They're actually taking more to away games than I saw at some home games over the previous years. So the town's really grabbed this. They've grabbed the opportunity. They're averaging 400 to 500, fans a game. I'm not quite sure where, when you had 110 and 110, you end up with 500, but they've obviously marketed that very well. And I read something that I think in the history of Ossett Albion, like 75-year history, they sold maybe 30 shirts, to fans, whereas Ossett United in their first season sold 1,000. And, I think that says everything, that the town's really got on board this. The good first season helped, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. Now it's about keeping that momentum and moving that into a second season.
Well, that's what we love to hear on the Non-League Show. Some positive stories, out of some negatives, because there were some a few dissenting voices, as you said. But for clubs... For clubs to go forward, they need to work as a business, and it's clearly worked with the crowds going up. And obviously, with you, are you part of their scouting network now? Then out in Norway, or
I'm actually the official head of the Ossett United Norwegian Supporters Club. So there are two of us in it at the moment. Me and my missus in it at the moment, but we're open to welcome anybody from the Norwegian land. We have a flag up behind the goal. There's also a Swedish flag up as well for the Swedish supporters club. So Peter Åhlund, who was originally an Albion fan but has converted now to the ways of Ossett United. So Peter's come over. I met Peter. He came over for the County Cup final last season. So yeah, so we've got this real sort of international flavour at the ground. I know the guys, some of the media guys over here in Norway have actually picked up on this as well on the club, and they're interested in doing a little piece. And I think non-league football is it's really starting to thrive in England. It's actually loved a lot over here in Norway. You'd be surprised actually how many non-league teams have supporters clubs over here.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I'll have to introduce you to my club's Hayes and Jelling United, and we've got about 30, 40 members of our Norwegian Supporters Association.
Yeah, yeah.
I keep saying pre-season should be a tour out there, but obviously it doesn't fit too well with your season.
No, but I mean, I'm trying to get the United lads out here as well. I'm sure they could play some evening games. I think the hardest thing would be, people have asked me, what's the level of Norwegian football compared to English? Well, technically, they're very, very good players here. But physically, it's nowhere near non-league football in England. So it would be interesting to see. It'd be interesting to see, an Evo Stick team come and challenge a team from the second or third, maybe fourth division here. I think technically, the Norwegians might be a little bit better, the higher levels. But I think physically, I'm not sure whether they would match the English, the contributory league side. So it'd be a hell of a matchup. It'd be interesting to see.
Yeah. And obviously, you've also taken on an ambassadorial role for Ref Support recently as well. And we've spoken with Ref Support a number of times on the show. And it's all about just trying to change the public perception of referees and just offering... As the term says, some support, because it can be a lonely job out there in the middle, can't it?
Yeah, it can. And I've known Martin Cassidy from Ref Support for many years now, and I've followed the work that they've done. And I appreciate that there's sometimes that it looks as if they're almost clashing with the FA and FIFA and arguing with everybody. Ultimately, everybody wants the same thing. They want a safe environment for referees, and they want an environment in football where people actually, they understand the job of the referee. the one thing I've actually tried to push is that many referees have this perception that they are the most important people in the game. Now, if I take non-league football, for instance, I know when I used to referee in the Northern Counties League, I used to go to Wurzburgh Bridge in Barnsley, and there was a guy called Charlie who did everything at the club. And every club at non-league seems to have that one person. Mm. You know, they wash the kit, they cut the grass, they put the nets up, they stood on the turnstile. Referees are not the most important people in a game of football. They're hugely important. Of course they are, because they keep the game safe, they keep it under control. But we as a group of people have to remember that these volunteers, and they are volunteers at most clubs, these are the people that, you know, they're keeping football going outside of the professional game. So I think the idea with ref support is to develop referees, to encourage and train referees if we can, and to upskill them, but also to bring refereeing and football closer. I think there's a bit of a brick wall at times between them and us from both sides. And if we can break those barriers down and just get people to understand a little bit more, then that's got to be a good thing. It's got to be a positive thing going forward. So I'm really excited and really honoured to be part of Ref Support. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're pleased that you're part of that, and we're honoured to have you on the non-league show as well. Thank you for joining us, Bobby, and best of luck with your Norwegian adventure.
Thank you very much. Take care. It's been great.
So this week saw St George's Park play host once again to the Groundsman of the Year Award, celebrating the best of sports turf horticultural stuff across the pyramid. Plenty of winners and much deserved, highly commended awards, with the overall title at non-league level going to Declan Robinson and the ground staff at Boreham Wood. But our next guest came a close second overall and came top of the shop in the Isthmian League for his hard work at Hastings United last season. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show, Simon Rudkins.
Hello, Tim.
Good to have you on, Simon. Now, we'll start with the sad news, I guess, that the loss of your skills to non-league. You've, after winning this award and winning many awards over the years, you've called it a day at Hastings United.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I run my own business, and I think any groundsman will probably say the same. When you're looking after a football pitch, it kind of takes over your life a little bit. You're constantly thinking about weather and what needs doing on the pitch, when the next game is, when they're training on the pitch. And, you know, when you're trying to juggle that with life, it's, you know, sometimes there's certain influences that happen, that kind of, means you can't continue putting in the hours and dedication that you have done. So, yeah, with a heavy heart, really, I decided at the end of July that I'd call it a day for now. And
You never want to say for now in non-league, mate, because the people that grab hold of that, and they'll have your back.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, I don't think you can ever say never, really, in whatever you do in life. And, you know, I don't know how much I'm going to miss it. Certainly the last couple of weeks has been lovely, not having to think about it. But probably maybe in a couple of months' time, I'll be like, oh, I want to get back and, you know, get behind the mower and repair a few divots and get out there and put some water on the pitch. But, you know, I'll just wait and see what happens. And if opportunity comes along, then obviously it's something I can consider.
Yeah. But have I got this right? You've been involved with the club for 20-odd years and 11 of those as a groundsman.
Yeah, that's right. I kind of got involved with the football club. I'd been watching Hastings and St Leonard's at the time. And then I decided to have a bit of a change of career and went and studied at Plumpton College. And at the time I was really short of money. So I kind of asked people at Hastings United whether there was any voluntary roles so I could still watch the football. And I became a steward, and from there I sort of emptied bins and cleaned toilets, became program editor, became a director, worked behind the bar. Probably not much I didn't do there, really, apart from manage the team or wash the kit. I think they're about the only two things I haven't done.
It sounds a familiar tale of people getting involved in non-league. You pick your hand up and then suddenly, the amazing things that you learn. As you say, you'd gone to college to study the horticultural bit, so you had a bit about you, and then you become groundsman. But, I mean, you're still doing your groundsman work as a job, and I believe you're involved at Southampton as well on a match day?
Yeah. My business is actually landscaping, so I kind of do fencing, paving, decking, that kind of work, which is a sort of strain on the body. But yeah, match days, I work down at Southampton on a rota basis with a great group of guys down there, and yeah, I really enjoy that. It's a totally different world to non-league football. It's good to see how the the professional game has kind of all the equipment. Not all the equipment, but you know, they've got obviously a lot more, and a lot more manpower and money, and what they can do with a pitch compared to what groundsmen at non-league can do.
Yeah, I mean, that must be great as well, because you obviously brought some of that. Well, I guess there's some science, some know-how that you've then brought back to the non-league game with Hastings. I mean, how tough is it to create a winning playing surface as you have, you know, year in, year out, really, collecting awards and plaudits for your hard work, on the budget and resources that a non-league club has?
I mean, I think I mentioned it a minute ago about dedication, and you know, I'm not trying to blow my own trumpet, but I think when you're looking after a football pitch, it's obviously a living plant, and it's something you've just got to, you know, give attention to all the time. It's not something you can think, oh, I won't do anything for 2 or 3 weeks, because in that 2 or 3 weeks, you know, it can make a big difference. So it's doing things that, you know, little and not often, really. And you know, I have learned a lot from Twitter, and you know, seeing what professionals do. Obviously being down at Southampton's helped. And you know, there's certain things that I've done at the pilot field where I've tried to like do what they do at professional clubs, albeit with not much money and not the same amount of equipment and not the same amount of hours. But you know, it's doing those little things that can make a big difference.
And I guess that's where the Groundsman of the Year awards as well. I mean, it's nice, you know, day out at St George's Park, but it's also a great networking opportunity, isn't it? So you get to meet other people in a similar sort of game, probably you know, swap stories and sob stories as well, probably as well. But it's important to recognise, you know, people like yourself that are putting in countless hours, and you probably don't even know the number of hours you've put in every week, you know, even over the last year, 6 months, because it's just one of those things that you do, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, you know, you sort of know how many hours you do to prepare a pitch, but it's the other things, like going up there in the middle of the night, moving sprinklers around, because at the pilot field there's no automatic irrigation system, it's just like hose pipes, and you know, going up there, you know, before work and doing maybe an hour's divoting, and you know, putting some seed down in the goal mouth, and it's all like little things like that kind of eats into your time. But you know, I loved every minute of it, really, and you know, it was a shame to give it up, but sometimes you have to make difficult decisions in life, and you just hope you don't regret them.
Yeah, well, hopefully, you know, we're not losing you completely from non-league. I'm sure you'll still be around, and you know, when time allows, I'm sure you'll be back down at Pilot Field just cheering them on. Now, I guess from your, you know, I said in 11 years experience as a groundsman down there, and then, you know, winning various plaudits over the years for these Groundsman of the Year awards, what is it that makes a good playing surface at non-league level? Because you're obviously not trying, well, you'd like to emulate like Wembley and the Emirates and places like that, but that, you know, that's all got science and bits of plastic in the grass and everything like that. You know, what is it just time and dedication and strategy that makes a decent grass surface?
Yeah, I mean, when I first started, I didn't really know much about turf care and looking after football pitches, but then you start picking up things. And I suppose for me, the biggest things I've done at the pilot field is, you know, making sure I can keep the pitch as clean as possible, which means putting a rotary mower over the pitch after a game to pick up debris, trying to give it as much air as possible. So, you know, trying to get it verti-drained as often as possible, or spiked, and water, feeding it. And cutting it, obviously, they're the important things, as well as, you know, putting back divots after games. So, you know, those are kind of the main things I focused on, and I think obviously it was fairly successful.
you've done quite well at it. But it is that you're just talking about it, just standard, getting up in the middle of the night, move a sprinkler around, and then when everybody else is off, maybe in the bar enjoying a celebratory beer or something, you're out there collecting the debris on the mower, ready so that the next game can be played in a couple of days. So, I mean, and before that, you then got to do all the other preparation, like the divots, and even cutting the grass again. There is so much work that goes on behind the scenes of football club. And we talk about, particularly in recent weeks, we've spoken about the summer, where people say it's the pre-season or the close season. That's when football clubs are at their busiest, and particularly as a groundsman, because you're trying to get people off the playing field as quickly as possible so you can do the reseeding and things like that. And then you've got a tight window because everybody wants to start playing pre-season friendlies.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think in my the years I was groundsman at Hastings, the window actually got shorter and shorter.
What about someone that you got involved, just as a volunteer, and then changing your career? What about someone that's interested in maybe getting involved as a groundsman? Is it just have a chat with the people that are at your local club?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, in Hastings, like around the Hastings area, there's not that many football clubs really, but I think even on a professional level, from the conversations I've had with professional groundsmen, if someone's interested in becoming a groundsman, I think most professional groundsmen would be more than happy to sort of show someone around a training ground or a stadium. Especially with non-league football clubs, I think there's always, whoever's a groundsman in a non-league football club would always be willing to take on someone that's prepared to help out. And then, from that, someone might think, oh yeah, this is a career for me. And, you don't know what it can lead to. So, not like everything in a non-league football club, it relies on people that are either doing stuff for next to nothing or voluntary. And, certainly from a groundsman point of view, it's, labour intensive, and the more help, the better pitch you can get. So yeah, definitely there's opportunities there.
So what you're no longer the groundsman at Hastings United, so what do? You hand over the keys to the mower, or just someone else just takes it over from you?
Yeah, I mean, it was I kind of had sort of a 4-week signing off period, I suppose, and I just carried on doing what I did, and tried to carry on doing it professionally, as if I wasn't leaving. And I wanted to hand over the pitch in as good a state as possible to the new groundsman. And I think my last day out there was on Wednesday the 31st of July, and then I met the new groundsman on the Friday, and I handed all the keys, talked through a few things with him that like electric fences, and didn't take too long to go through the equipment in the shed because not much in there. But it was quite a sad day. But I think he's, from what I can see, he's doing a decent job, and hopefully he's enjoying it as much as I did.
Well, good stuff. Simon, it's been great to have you on the Non-League Football Show. Great to celebrate the Groundsman of the Year awards, and congratulations on a nice bit of glassware, I guess, to go on the shelf.
Yeah, I've got quite a few in the cabinet now. So, I'll squeeze those two in, and someone else can have a go next year.
Well,
hopefully it's new groundsman at Hastings. Hopefully Craig, who took over from me, hopefully he'll be nominated next year, and he can get some silverware in his cupboard.
Well, he's certainly got a lot to live up to. But Simon, thanks again for joining us on the show. Best of luck with the stuff that you are doing, and hopefully we'll see you back involved in non-league very soon.
Okay, Tim. Thanks very much.
So just time to head on over to Non-League Towers and find out what's been going on in the world of non-league and what the non-league paper is lining up for us for our Sunday morning read. And joining us this week, a man with a new title, I believe senior writer at the non-league paper now, David Richardson.
Yeah, I think that's right, but I'm not too sure what it means, but there you go.
The title change, which probably means the job description change, it just means some more work for you to do then, yeah?
Yeah, same old stuff here, really.
Well, it's same old stuff, but it's great that the season's back, isn't it? You know, we've actually got a full programme this weekend as well. The Northern Premier League fully underway this weekend.
Yeah, that's right. It's such a busy month, August, really. I think even, you know, like you say, Northern Premier League hasn't got going yet, but, you know, there's always already been four games played in top two tiers. Obviously, the rest of step three started. We've had a round in the FA Cup, extra preliminary round. So, yeah, now we're obviously sort of Saturday, we're sort of all guns blazing, really, with everything getting going. But, no, exciting, really, to have it all officially underway for the season.
Yeah, I mean, you guys have still been going throughout the summer. You know, some of us have been able to put our feet up a little bit, but it's always so busy. For everybody that is involved with football, it's always so busy, that pre-season. Although, you know, pre-season games mean different things to different people, there's so much going on behind the scenes that people don't see.
Yeah, definitely. I was actually at Solly Hull a week before the season started, for a bit of a media day there with Tim Flowers, and they were having their team photo taken, so all the players were there and staff, etc. And I was speaking to Darryl Hills, who's the chairman or co-owner at the club, who has very much been a driving force there. And he said, when I said, well, how's your summer been? You know, is it quieter? And he actually said, well, no, I enjoy the summer because it gives you time to do all the things that you want to do in the summer, really, and then prepare and carry on sort of building things and moving things forward, because obviously they've made a number of improvements to their ground over the summer and sort of throughout last season as well. And he sort of sees the, I suppose, off season as sort of a key time, really. And I think that's very much the case for every non-league club, really. There's, you know, I think during the season you probably sort of get wrapped up in what happens on the pitch, but then obviously when it's finished, you then have the time to see how things are going off it, really. And like I say, it's a pivotal time to be able to make those changes to your club, which hopefully are for the better during this time. So yeah, busy summer as usual, really, I think, across on the course. You've always got the manager coming and going, players as well, changes like that, new leagues, teams coming into the system, teams coming into a new league, etc. So that's seemingly never ending, but good to have the season up and running this weekend.
Yeah, and that's why we love non-league. You could never get bored, because there are stories. There aren't. Yeah, this week's been, I suppose, a bit quiet on major stories, but there's a couple that we will come to. You mentioned about Solihull Moors, and obviously they're top of the tree at the moment after four games, and it probably proves that it's worthwhile doing that preparation, because they were very good last season and just narrowly missed out. But as you say, they've made a few tweaks, a few changes, and they've really hit the ground running at the top of the National League there.
Yeah, they have. And obviously in midweek, they had a big result at Chorley, winning 6-1 there. I think Chorley hadn't conceded a goal before then, or maybe conceded one. Obviously, Solihull have gone there and won 6-1. It sort of, really, for me, I felt like it was a bit of a statement of intent, sort of probably feeling their way into the league a little bit in their first three games, but then to go there and get that result, it is impressive, particularly at this early stage of the season. And the likes of sort of Fylde, Harrogate, Wrexham, Chesterfield probably looked at that and thought, oh, okay, there's, you know, they mean business here. Obviously, they would have liked their new players to bed in quickly. They've only made three signings this summer, but they are three quality additions in Mitch Hancock, Paul McCallum and Callum Howe. McCallum scored twice in Tuesday's win. Nathan Blissett got a hat-trick. So, you know, their firepower has started very promisingly. It does bode well. One of the things I was speaking to Darryl Hills about the other week was, when he first came into the club, that one of the first improvements that he made was tarmacking the car park, because he felt that psychologically it showed that they were here for
to build right up from the foundations, and you know, it would be easy for him to have come in and instantly sort of tried to invest in the team or other things. But by doing that, it's sort of really shown quite literally the groundwork was there and being put in from the start. So it is a club heading in the right direction, and you know, probably again another one that sooner or later will be playing in the Football League.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's also that constant battle, particularly as a co-owner, isn't it? You know, what comes first, and what's the most important thing? But you know, it is building the club all round, isn't it? You know, on and off the field and further afield as well. You know, it's spreading the word, which Solihull Moors did so well last season, and a club that, you know, been trying to do that in recent years is obviously Hereford FC. So we've discussed the last year, a change of manager, and they were trying to go in a different direction. Last week, we spoke with Matt Badcock about the first big managerial change at Bradford Park Avenue, and Marcus Law since gone in there, which is another big name. Mm. But then Hereford this week, just 3 weeks into the season, and Mark Richards was let go, and Tim Harris, head of football, he's been there for a while. I've known Tim for years. His time at Gloucester City, Newport County, understands football really well. But he's in charge. Managed to get a decent result in midweek. But we talk about stability, and at the start of the season, changing your manager is not really going to be on the high list of priorities, is it?
No, I think particularly after sort of the Bradford one, you probably thought, well, it can't get sort of any stranger really in terms of managers early in the season being let go. But to me, the Hereford one seems slightly bizarre in that they put out quite a lengthy statement in the announcement saying that Mark Richards had been sacked, and they referenced how towards the end of last season they only won one game in their last eight, which maybe put across an impression that they weren't particularly happy with the way things were going. That said, they've obviously stuck by him for the summer. Mark Richards came in towards at the beginning of last season when Peter Beadle was surprisingly sacked as well. And obviously, you probably thought, well, they've given him the summer to build his own team of his own players, etc., put across his philosophy, all that sort of stuff. So then why give him three games to effectively prove himself? I think if that's the right phrase.
Again, referring back to that statement, I think they actually said that they liked his recruitment over the summer as well. They had faith in the signings, and Tim's obviously got the best out of them in this week. But it is one of those strange things. But I also see that Mick Merrick, one of the Supporters Trust board members, has also resigned this week. So I don't know if that's linked, if there's anything for that. But again, it doesn't send out the right message. You're now going to have, they're now trying to recruit a new manager, and I think they've got, you know, another statement gone out, the sort of person they're looking to recruit. But if you're a manager, you know, you might want to go to a big club. There's, you know, great potential at Hereford, but you'd look at it and you think, well, actually, you know, how stable is it off the field, you know, and could you actually get on and do your job properly?
Well, it does seem slightly odd. You know, and again, it wasn't like they'd got off to a horrific start in the league. I think they took a point against Spennymoor on the opening day of the season, aside fancy to be up there. And they went to their local rivals, I guess, Gloucester, who had a good result there. Obviously, the one bad one that they had was losing at King's Lynn, who were newly promoted. But, I mean, to take 4 points from your first three games, it's not awful, though. Not really. And, you know, like you said, just, you know, again, now whoever comes in is working with a group of players that are not of his choice. He hasn't had sort of time to work with them, etc. It does seem sort of strange, really. Like you say, I don't know the complete ins and outs of the board member leaving or, you know, moving on, but it doesn't give the right impression, I guess, you know, for whatever reason it may be. When you see that, you think, oh, well, what's going on there? So yeah, obviously it'll be interesting to see who they can get in, and it'll be interesting to see how they can pick this up and how they will go this season, because I think they want to continue moving upwards as a club, as they did so quickly under Peter Beadle.
Yeah, and you mentioned the 4 points from three games. You think, well then how many other managers are already looking over their shoulders? Then they see these results. Obviously, the Bradford Park Avenue we discussed that. Taken a couple of hammerings, but it was early on in the season. You know, there's always quirks and whatever. And you know, we talk about the frailties of management. But if you're going to get 4 points out of three games, we don't know what else has gone on behind the scenes or what discussions have already been had. But there's going to be plenty of managers that get to, you know, maybe the end of August, probably even the end of September, that will be happy to have that number of points from however many games they played.
Yeah, definitely. I think nowadays in football management, I mean, it's probably widely accepted that the lifespan of a manager isn't very long. I mean, clearly, you know, whether that's right or wrong, it's sort of almost become the norm nowadays. And yeah, like you say, you know, you do wonder, you know, managers probably going into games thinking, you know, a bad result here and I could be shown the door. I just think it's odd for Hereford not to sort of stick with their man, really, and the new structure that they had under Tim Harris and what they were trying to build there. It's, an odd one for me. He'd be in charge of the football club anyway.
And I mean, one positive from it all is as a journalist dealing in non-league, make sure that you keep your contacts book up to date because you have to keep updating where all these players and managers are at the moment. But just talk about some positive stuff. Some other news this week. FC Isle of Man are seeking to join the National League system, a bit like Jersey Bulls have this year as Jersey FC and Guernsey have previously done before.
Yeah, an interesting one. Another Ireland club looking to make the move into non-league. Of course, like you say, Jersey Bulls very recently sort of the new Ireland club on the scene who played their first game a week ago in the Combined Guarantees Division 1. And obviously the sort of more established and famous club, I suppose, is Guernsey. I think we sort of all know about in non-league. Obviously, the challenges these clubs face is the travelling. And obviously, you know, I understand Guernsey have to sort of pay for the visiting clubs to fly over, etc. And in terms of kick-off times as well, that's an element too. So, interesting that another club wants to join the system. But, you know, there is a appetite for this. I think at Jersey Bulls there was almost 1,000 fans there for their first game, and that's step six. So yeah, it does show that there's a crowd for it, I guess. And it, you know, hopefully their crowds stay high the longer the club goes on and continues to compete at that level.
Well, yeah, you think it's certainly a novelty as a player, as a manager, you know, even a fan. You know, technically, is it international football you're playing then? Is it sort of, I guess that the issue is how they're going to cover the costs, the additional costs, you know, the clubs, are they inconvenienced when they're playing against them? But, you know, the precedent's been set with Guernsey and how they deal with things and how they've been able to help fund the travel away. And I know they've still got difficulties because they can't enter in the FA Cup. And they're...
Yeah.
And then is football fully embracing it if there is that restriction? So, there's a precedent there and hopefully it will give people the opportunity to experience non-league football. The further afield we go, I've spoken to a Premier League referee now in Norway who's discussing about how non-league is so popular in the Scandinavian country. So we are trying to spread the reach of non-league, and if that's another island country, then that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think I see sort of both sides of the argument, to be honest. Like you've been saying, you know, obviously there's a sort of cost and an effect it has on other clubs, I suppose, of having to go to these places. You know, it'd be interesting to find out of the other clubs in those two sides leagues to sort of see what their feelings are about having to travel a distance to go and play a game like this. But again, I mean, like I say, I guess it's no bad thing really if non-league's name is out there more and is reaching further flung places and there's in more corners of the world, I guess.
Well, we've got the National League clubs playing in the Scottish League Cup or wherever. Is it the Tunnocks Caramel Wafer this year? Is that where we're going with it? But yeah, and that's yeah. that's an international flavour with the Irish clubs in it as well. So, and it is a novelty to begin with, and you know there are people that are complaining and that sort of thing. But in spreading the word and getting more publicity for non-league football in the right way, it seems to be working.
Yeah, it does. You know, again, I think with the rise of social media and the internet and club websites, there is a lot more traction nowadays about lower league football. You know, you only have to go on Twitter on a weekend and see the latest sort of one goal from someone scored. But again, it all helps for the profile of non-league. And I think it's increasingly becoming popular, these lower levels. People enjoy, you know, not having to maybe travel so far to their local club, you know, enjoying a beer on the stand, all those things that, you know, you don't get at the top level. So again, as we've said, if non-league is growing and there's new avenues that can be explored, I'm all for it.
And as you say, non-league is growing, so probably a good time to give a little pitch for the new pyramid structure, and of course the very worthy, very very interesting new non-league paper pyramid poster that can be obtained from the paper, because it is one of those things that even I you're probably the same. We're dealing with these clubs day in day out, but every now and then you just have to look back to see what division they're in or where. You know, because there is so much hopping around, there's so many new divisions. But the pyramid poster, whenever I go and if I go and go for a meeting in with my other hat on somewhere, and I see something about non-league, it always just creates that extra reassurance and trust in the person that I'm having a meeting with.
Yeah, you're right. It's we constantly have to focus on it and check that we're getting teams in the right leagues. Obviously, it has been made slightly difficult with restructuring we've been going through over the last two or three years. But yeah, hopefully from 2020, it'll be a little bit more straightforward in terms of knowing which clubs are in which league and which leagues clubs will be going into should they be promoted or relegated. But now, if you haven't got your pyramid poster, get one. That one up. I gather they're flying off the shelves, and that'll be with you early in the season. I think they're being sent out in September. You can pre-order one now and then get that up on the wall in your bedroom or in a clubhouse somewhere.
Indeed. So obviously a great reason to buy the non-league paper this Sunday as well. You know, don't forget you can also get your fantasy football team in as well and show everybody how well you understand non-league. But and no doubt bumper coverage because of all the other leagues kicking off as well across the pyramid. So anything else we can expect in this Sunday's paper, though?
Yeah, so we've got a bumper sort of 56-page paper this weekend. Of course, as we've mentioned, Northern Premier League underway and Step 4 coming into play as well. Of course, we've got all the National League action, lots of pictures from the big games in those leagues. We've also got a special 8-page pull out on the National League, who this weekend it's the 40th anniversary from when the conference, or I guess the Alliance Premier League, was formed. So we've spoken to the likes of Neil Warnock, who of course won from the title with Scarborough the first year that the league was changed to the Football Conference, and the year that automatic promotion was in there.
I'd imagine that's a great read, because there's Neil Warnock's a Marmite sort of person, you know, that you either love him or hate him. But having done similar interviews with him over the, he loves his non-league football.
Yeah, he really does. It was brilliant talking to him and hearing his stories. It was like he had managed Scarborough yesterday, to be honest. He was reeling off his starting 11 from back there, telling stories about the team coach, where they would train, putting 50p in the meter on a sort of a Sunday league pitch that he used to manage, where they had sort of two floodlights, the battles with Barnet the year they won the title, obviously with Barry Fry's Barnet as well, and the stories he had about him. Fascinating to interview him, and so that will be in there on Sunday. And another name, Barry Fry, who I just mentioned, spoke to him as well. Liam Watson, of course, won Conference North title 3 times, and loads of others as well, as we sort of look back and celebrate what the top flight of non-league has given us over the last 40 years and all the memories.
Good stuff. Well, David, thanks for joining us again on the Non-League Football Show, and we look forward to reading all about it in Sunday's Non-League paper.
Brilliant. Thanks very much, Tim.
So that's it for this week. A big thank you to all of our guests, and a big thank you to everybody for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. And Dave Anderson, he's on at Dave Anderson 78. Caroline Barker is at Caroline Barker, and myself at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L. Plus, of course, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Deezer, on TuneIn Radio, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Thank you and goodbye.
Jabber Production. JIBBA JABBA.